Shirley by Charlotte Bronte. Of late years, an abundant shower of curates has fallen upon the north of England. They lie very thick on the hills. Every parish has one or more, and they ought to be doing a great deal of good. But not of late years are we about to speak. We are going back to the beginning of this century. Although that affluent rain had not descended and curates were scarce in the West Riding of Yorkshire, in the year of 1811-12, three sat together at dinner. Allow me to introduce Mr. Dunn, curate of Winbury, Mr. Malone, curate of Briarfield, Mr. Sweeting, curate of Nunley. They are at Mr. Dunn's lodgings, being the habitation of one John Gale, a small clothier. Mrs. Gale waits on them, but a spark of the hot kitchen fire is in her eye.
"More bread!"
cries Mr. Malone, in a tone which, though prolonged but to utter two syllables, proclaims him at once a native of the land of shamrock and potatoes. Mrs. Gale offered the loaf.
"Cut it, woman!"
said her guest, and the woman cut it accordingly. Had she followed her inclination, she would have cut the parson also. Her Yorkshire soul revolted absolutely from his manner of command. As they sat thus and sipped their wine, a foot was heard on the outer doorstep, and the knocker quivered to a sharp appeal. Mr. Gale went and opened.
"Whom have you upstairs in the parlour?"
asked a voice.
"Oh, Mr. Helstone, is it you, sir? I could hardly see you for the darkness. Will you walk in, sir?"
With these words a person entered. A middle-aged man in black, short of stature but straight of port, and bearing on broad shoulders a hawk's head, beak and eye, the whole surrounded by a shovel hat, which he did not seem to think it necessary to remove before the presence in which he stood.
"What?"
he began with the air of a veteran officer chiding his subalterns.
"I find you gentlemen tarrying over your cheap wine and scolding like angry old women."
And he began to rebuke the three young curates for drinking while their counterparts were out preaching.
"I came to see Malone," he continued. "I have an errand unto thee, O captain."
"What is it?" inquired Malone discontentedly. "There can be no funeral to take at this time of day."
"Have you arms about you?"
"Arms, sir? Yes, and legs." And he advanced the mighty members.
"Bah! Weapons, I mean.
I have the pistols you gave me yourself. I never part with them. I lay them ready cocked on the chair by my bedside at night."
"Very good. Will you go to Hollow's Mill?"
"What is stirring at Hollow's Mill?"
"Nothing as yet, nor perhaps will be.
But Moore is alone there. He has sent all the workmen he can trust to Stillborough."
"I am none of his well-wishers, sir. I don't care for him."
"So, Malone, you are afraid?"
"You know me better than that. If I really thought there was a chance of a row, I would go. But Moore is a strange, shy man, whom I never pretend to understand, and for the sake of his sweet company only, I would not stir a step."
"But there is the chance of a row. You know Moore has resolved to have the new machinery, and he expects two wagon loads of frames and shears from Stillborough this evening. Scott and a few picked men are gone to fetch them. It is unlikely that this night will pass quite tranquilly."
"They will bring them in safely and quietly enough, sir."
"Moore says so, and he affirms he wants nobody. But I call him very careless. He sits in the counting-house with the shutters unclosed. He goes out here and there after dark just as if he were the darling of the neighbourhood, instead of its detestation. He takes no warning from the fate of Pearson, nor from that of Armitage. One shot in his own house, and the other on the moor."